Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud and Out podcast. We are your hosts, Andreas and
Michael Wittig. We have been building on AWS since 2009 and follow along as we build two products for the AWS Marketplace, BucketEV and Marbot. This is episode number 77 and we are recording this on May 12th in 2023. In case you're watching this live on YouTube or LinkedIn, feel free to ask your questions in the chat and we will make sure to answer them during the show. So, Andreas, I will start this episode with a little announcement, and this is for everyone who is on the video stream. Our new book, Amazon Web Services in Action, the third edition, is actually available. So you can buy it on manning.com, that's the publisher. You can also buy it on Amazon if you wish. If you want to buy it on manning.com, I will paste a coupon code into the chat. So the coupon code is it's Wittig40. So, but I paste it into the chat so you can see there. So let me do that quickly. Okay. So with that coupon code on manning.com, you get 40% off, and you can either get 40% on the ebook or also on the printed book if you prefer, like a real book, like the one that I have in my hands at the moment. So check that out. So you might ask yourself, okay, what actually changed in the third edition? And I can give you a very quick overview. So we added two new chapters. One is about containers. So that's a completely new chapter. It covers App Runner. So this is the most straightforward way to run containers on AWS these days. It also covers ECS and Fargate. So this is this more sophisticated option where you can more or less control all the knobs. And we also rebuilt the whole chapter about deployment. So we switched from Elastic Beanstalk and OpsWorks, and now we are, I think we focus on code, we focus on code deploy as well as on building an AMI with Packer and then shipping it with CloudFormation with the rolling update in the autoscaling group. So that's other completely new chapters. Besides that, of course, we reworked all the other chapters, we updated all the things, the facts, and the changes are now in the book. Updated all the figures, updated all the examples, so they are now up to date again. So if you're interested in that, please go check it out. It was a hard, like I think 1 year journey to get the third edition out. So we are very happy that it's done now and that you can actually now read it. And we are looking forward to your feedback. So feel free to send us your feedback about the book.
Maybe one thing, so there's really a lot that changes over the years with AWS. So when reworking the chapter, you notice that really many, many things have changed. To give you one example, so we had in the book about the simple storage service S3, we had the discussion in the book that you have to make sure to be aware of that when updating an object, this update gets is eventually consistent. So this was the case for many, many years, and you had to be aware of that. And nowadays, this is gone. So now AWS introduced that S3 is now always read after write consistent. So this is just one example of many things where we had a whole section in the chapter discussing this issue, and then now this is completely solved. So AWS is really shipping features and changes, positive changes to their infrastructure. So this was really an interesting thing to go over the chapters and redo them to see how AWS is improving their platform over the years. Because when you just read through the news every day, you don't actually get an overview of or a feeling for what has changed over a longer time span. Yeah. Very cool. So I'm really happy with the book being out. So there's maybe one thing we could ask you, our listeners. So if you could spare some minutes, and if you have been reading the book, please write a review on Amazon.com or at Manning. That really helps us to get the book out. So if you have, that would really help us. Okay, so Michael, I think that's it for AWS in Action. So this is always so. it's really a cool thing to have the printed book in hand to finish the process. But the process itself is really hard to get through all of that. So now we're really happy. And for the next 1 to 2 years, we're happy that we do not have to touch the book because it's now printed. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about today, Michael, is Amazon Inspector. So have you ever used Amazon Inspector, Michael? Can you remember that? Yeah, so there is actually AWS announced Amazon Inspector version 2, or the old one. I think the old one is called Classic now. So the old one is still around, the old version of the service. But I think they did a complete rewrite of the service, obviously, and started from scratch. So now we have Inspector version 2. And I noticed, or I came to that topic because one of our customers for Marbot, our AWS monitoring solution, asked us if we could support alerts or findings from Amazon Inspector. So first of all, I looked into the whole thing, and what is Amazon Inspector doing? It's actually two or three main features that it comes with. So first of all, it ships an agent, if you configure it, it ships an agent to all your EC2 instances and then collects information about the software running on your instance and is then collecting that information in the backend and then generating findings out of that. So it will inform you about, I don't know, for example, a vulnerability in the TLS that you are using on the system, or I don't know, the Java that you're using is out of date and you need to update that because of a security issue, stuff like that. So this is what Inspector is about for EC2. And it uses the system manager, and I would call that actually it feels a little bit like a Trojan horse. So you use the system manager to install Inspector on the machine, so you roll that out very easily in case you have system manager running and the IAM role configured for your EC2 instances. Then it's really easy to get that out, and that's for EC2. The second thing, I've been running into that because of a consulting gig I've been doing as well, is it also scans ECR repositories. So that's something I want to talk about later. So basically, it scans container images, again, for known vulnerabilities, security issues with the packages and stuff that are installed on the container images. And it also supports scanning Lambda functions. So same here. Actually, I haven't looked into the Lambda function part, so I cannot really talk about the details here, but that's basically the three things. So it covers the three major things: containers, virtual machines, and functions. So everything that is basically compute on AWS, which is kind of cool to have that all in one service. So what I've been doing then is I've basically made sure that Marbot is capable to subscribe to the findings that Inspector creates. So whenever Inspector creates a finding, it also sends an event over EventBridge. And Marbot is now automatically configuring an event rule for that so that we forward basically all those findings to Marbot. And then, as we always do, when we get such events from AWS, we make sure to parse them properly and to display them in Slack or Microsoft Teams. So that is what we have now built into Marbot for Inspector version 2. We had it for version 1, but as this is now outdated, we had to update it for Inspector version 2 as well. And then there's one other aspect of Inspector that I stumbled upon, and this is the ECR image scanning. So when you look through the ECR documentation, you find two options to scan container images. One has been around for quite some time. It is called basic image scanning with ECR. So this is something you can configure on your ECR repository. You can either do a scan on whenever you push a new image, and you can also manually start a scan job of a specific image. And so this is the one option that you have. And then there is the advanced image scanning. This is, it's not really documented what Inspector is doing on top of what the built-in basic scanning is doing. The only thing, so they say it's advanced image scanning, whatever that means in detail. So they're probably using another scan engine, but I'm not 100% sure which one. That's not documented as far as I know. And the only difference is that you can configure Amazon Inspector to rescan all the images in your repository automatically, or you can do scan the images that have been pushed within the last 30 or 180 days. So that is what you can configure with ECR image scanning. As an alternative, what I'm currently working on is with basic ECR image scanning, you can build a Lambda function that triggers scanning of the images periodically. So once a day is the rate limit per image. And so you can build a similar behavior with that. And what I like about being able to trigger the scan myself is I'm currently working on something that when setting up an ECS service, I know exactly which image I'm currently using, which one is rolled out through the service. And I can then configure my Lambda function accordingly to only trigger the scan for this specific image. Because what I've seen in practice is if you just scan all the images in your repository and you want to keep the older images that you have been using, for example, to be able to roll back to a version 1 year in time or something, then you have the problem that it scans 1 year old images. And of course, you will find security vulnerabilities in there because this thing hasn't been updated for a year, right? So if you want to keep your images, it doesn't really make sense, in my opinion, to scan just the whole archive, because that's not really valuable information because that code is not running anywhere. And as far as I've seen, there is no way to build something to only scan the images that are currently in use with the Amazon Inspector. So that's a difference. I'm currently working on an implementation, and I should definitely write a blog post about that. Yeah, so that is Amazon Inspector, actually a quite easy to use service. So I was quite impressed about how easy it is to roll that out to Amazon Linux and ECR.
All right, Andreas. Do you know about the pricing of Inspector?
Yeah, they are charging for it. I think it's host based, as far as I remember. Yeah.
All right. So the next topic is, as you might already know, if you are listening to this podcast for a longer time, we are usually using a lot of CloudFormation, and that changed a little bit over the last years because we are kind of frustrated with the lack of coverage of CloudFormation, as many other people are as well. And so we looked more into Terraform, and we are now using it more and more. And one thing that we stumble on is that, of course, in Terraform, there's also coverage lags. So not everything is covered in Terraform as well. So in the past weeks, we were running into some situations where it would be cool if there were just something be there that wasn't there. So we thought about, okay, why not add it to the Terraform provider, the AWS provider, because it's open source. So you can open pull requests, and then if you are lucky and if you follow the guides, then you can add your functionality to the provider, and in the next release it will be there. So it sounds easy, and we I looked into that, and then the problem is that the Terraform AWS provider is written in the Go language. I'm not familiar with that, and I'm also not very interested in learning it, to be honest. So the kind of initial barrier is quite high if you're not familiar with the language. So I was thinking about, okay, I either have to learn this language now to just add a few attributes to the to my Terraform resources, or I'm looking for someone who can do that for me. So we actually found someone, and this is a shout out to Camel, and I will post the link to his GitHub profile in a minute. And he actually did the implementation for us because I was I was too lazy to kind of learn the language. So he did everything for us. But what we did is we added two new data sources, AWS SQS queues, like the plural. So this is the list of all the queues, as well as AWS RDS clusters. So this gives you a list of all the clusters. And we also added attributes, for example, to the AWS RDS cluster data source. And also we added a lot, many attributes to the AWS autoscaling group at a resource. So if you are, I think the one that is most often used is the AWS autoscaling group data resource. So if you're using that, so you will find many new attributes now in, I think it was released in 4.66 was the version, I think, and that included this change. And it really impressed me how straightforward it was to add a feature. Like if you follow the guide, if you add the documentation, if you add the tests, everything, then they will just, like, someone from HashiCorp will merge the pull request. And within, I think it took less than a week, the last change, your new feature is available in the AWS provider. And that was really cool. I mean, to be honest, in AWS, nothing takes 1 week. So if they promise to add something, then it months or years, basically, until they add it to CloudFormation. So I was really impressed how this works. And this really gives us opportunities here to improve the provider and adding the stuff that's missing instead of just complaining that's not there and what we do with CloudFormation most of the time. This was really a great experience, I think, and it's actually one data point that guides us in the direction of Terraform more and more. So I'm looking forward how this turns out, Andreas, in the end. So it's actually, it's less and less likely these days that we are starting with a new project in CloudFormation.
Probably not, yes. And probably also not CDK, because that depends on CloudFormation. Michael, I have one more thing. So I've seen a discussion going around on Twitter and LinkedIn. So Eric Pauly has written a blog post which is called Farewell to the Era of Cheap EC2 Spot Instances. And basically he makes the point that the prices for spot instances have been going up significantly within the past few months. So I think they are almost doubling. So of course it depends on the region and so on, but it turns out that in some regions the prices have been almost increasing by 90% or something. So we have observed similar things with Bucket AV. So Bucket AV, the antivirus solution for Amazon S3, where we spin up EC2 instances based on behind an SQS queue, and where we have always been using spot instances to keep the infrastructure costs low. And what we have observed there is that we are getting more and more spot interruptions as well. So running EC2 instances are getting interrupted, and then you cannot start new spot instances anymore because there's no more spot capacity available for those instance types. And so what I found interesting is the discussion. So Eric has written a summary, and he observes that the prices have been going up. He has a really great blog post. I will put the links in the show notes and the chat. And then he continued with his assumption is, he assumes that AWS is not manipulating the prices because he also sees increasing spot interruptions. So he arguments that the capacity is obviously low, and therefore he gets spot interruptions as well. So it's not only the prices are going up. And actually, I don't think that this argument is really valid. So let's think about the whole situation. So macroeconomics, many companies have to cut down their AWS costs. So what do you do if you have to do that? You try to turn down EC2 instances, or maybe use a smaller instance type wherever possible. So that's the easiest thing to reduce your AWS bill, right? And so when you do that, what happens in the data center? So the spare capacity goes up, in my opinion. So I would assume, I have no insights at all into AWS infrastructure, but that's just my assumption about from what I observe from the outside, from the macroeconomics. In theory, the utilization of the data center should go down. So they should have more spare capacity, not less, in my opinion. But on the other side, AWS has the problem that their revenue is not growing as fast as it has been, right? And so what they have to do is they have to find ways to increase their revenue somehow. So they have to increase prices. And of course, kind of making changes to their spot market helps them to achieve that. So I'm not 100% sure if it's really true that they are not making modifications to the spot market. It's not really a market. It's not a regulated financial market or something like that. It's just something that AWS comes up with. They make the rules. We don't know them. So it's not really a market, right? So they tell us, but it's not. Yeah, they said everything, so we don't. It's crazy. And you cannot buy from someone else as well, so it's only one. So yeah, it's not a market. You cannot really say that. And so my assumption is actually that they have adjusted a little bit how the spot, or not only a little bit, it seems they have significantly changed how the spot market works and how many capacity they put in there. And of course, if they shrink the capacity that they make available through the spot market, also the chances that you're getting interrupted are growing. And it's actually a good thing for AWS as well, because many have been running workloads on spot that are not really made for spot, because they do not really tolerate too many interruptions. But in the past, you could run a spot instances for years, right? Or at least month. And yeah, so my assumption is that they made changes to the spot market internally. Of course, they're not telling us, but I wouldn't assume that this is a really fair game, actually.
What I like about the blog post is, because we talked about this in this show as well a couple of times, Andreas, that we see higher spot interruption rates, and here also measured that in the blog post. And you can now, I think we also talked about if someone should measure that, and he basically did that. So he measured it, so we have the data, and it definitely shows that the likelihood of an interruption is now higher than before. That is what many, many people observe as well. Like, they don't have real data because most people don't have time to measure this, to be honest, because they just have to
keep the systems up and running. They don't have the many institutes running on spot.
Yeah, and AWS doesn't publish this data. They only publish the price, so they don't tell us the likelihood.
I think they have some information about the likelihood of an interruption as well in some of their calculators, but I don't know how accurate that is.
I don't know, But it definitely shows that this is not just me having this impression. It is real. So interruption rates are higher these days. And this is one of the reasons why we built this on-demand fallback that I talked about in a previous episode. I can't remember the number, but because it really is a problem now. Like before, AWS always told us that an instance can be interrupted. And it happened, but it wasn't a big problem. Now it happens more or less every day that we see instances interrupted, and we don't run many of them. And it also happens that you cannot launch any instance because there's no capacity in the pool. And this was not something that we observed 1 or 2 years ago. So that definitely changed something. And there are obvious reasons why they're going to do it, because for money reasons. So that's very obvious. I mean, they will definitely not tell us that they do it for that reasons. But it's also interesting that AWS has a couple there was 1 or 2 weeks ago, there was this blog post from this Amazon, how was this called, the Amazon video streaming team, that basically had a blog post where they kind of said that they switched from a more or less step function based, Lambda based thing to a more EC2 based thing for cost reasons. And there was a lot of argument around that in the internet. And then all the AWS guys started with their argumentation and very straightforward direction, everyone following that direction from Amazon. There was definitely an order from the top what they should do, and now I'm very interested in what's going to happen now, what argument AWS will prepare for us to understand the situation.
I would guess we wouldn't see any comment about this situation from AWS. I wouldn't expect that, to be honest. The problem is, so they cannot really increase their prices, right? If they do a big price increase on their overall on-demand rates and stuff, this would be really, I don't know how to call it. So this would be a big thing and would be a bad press for them. So they need to find some things where they can make little changes that that no one really knows.
Adding resources to AWS config is definitely wrong as well. So there was like that in the past, there were so many resources added that like never before. So they are just finding ways to
increase their revenue streams.
To increase the enterprise tax, yeah. So that's very cool.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so let's see where this is going. That's it, Michael. We will be back in 2 weeks. Subscribe to our newsletter, podcast, or the YouTube channel to make sure you're not up not missing the upcoming shows. We're also looking forward to your feedback, hello@cloudonow.io, or find us on LinkedIn, Mastodon, or Twitter. You will find all the links in the show notes or video description. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.
Bye.